Chapter 11. Getting Things Done. More inbound requests, context switches, and more complex work in general distinguish a senior software engineer's workload from more junior positions. Becoming seen as an engineer who gets things done goes beyond what's discussed in Part 2, Chapter 7, Getting Things Done. Of course, many approaches from that section apply here, such as focus on the most important work, unblock yourself, break down the work, find mentors you can learn from. But at the senior level, there are extra insights and useful approaches that we dive into now. In this chapter, we cover 1. Getting things done, perception and reality. 2. Your own work. 3. Your team. 4. The big picture. 1. Getting things done, perception and reality. Which one of you do you think your manager would describe as the engineer who gets things done? Yourself, or the peer who seemingly lives on Easy Street? It may be clear to you that you're getting things done, but how much of this does your manager see? If you do a poor job of communicating your work, but your peer is excellent at this, then the chances are your manager thinks they are better at getting things done. Perception and reality may differ. The prescription to get things done can be distinct from the process of doing so by solving hard problems. Your manager doesn't see what goes into meeting a given deadline for an important project, such as those steps you took to track down and fix a tricky bug, or the creative workarounds and shortcuts you employed. Sometimes there isn't a knowledgeable colleague to pair with who can observe and assist your efforts, so you work alone to get things done. Two things are necessary to be seen as a senior engineer who gets things done. 1. Ability to solve complex engineering problems in a pragmatic way. 2. Communication of work to peers and managers, including progress, roadblocks faced, solutions to roadblocks, and the complexity of the work. Communicate what you do. Communicating about your work becomes increasingly important with seniority. Don't assume your peers or manager understand what's easy or difficult about it. Instead, be explicit about this during status updates, in one-on-one discussions, and at team meetings. For example, if you solve a complex problem, tell your team during the weekly meeting. Last week, I came across a challenging edge case for our planned backend migration. I worked with another team to fix it. It took a bit longer than expected, but it is now done and we're ready to migrate. Although okay, this is a low-information description. It doesn't explain the work or why it was challenging, its importance, or how your efforts measured up to the task's complexity and outcome. Here's a better update that conveys all of this. Last week, as I was doing more validation for our migration script, I noticed our shadow outputs were different from what was expected for payment requests for around 2% of users. The differences were down to currency conversion in Brazil. If we rolled out this change, we'd overcharge customers there. As I looked into the reason for the difference, it turned out that the new currency conversion system was missing several countries, Brazil included. I worked with the team on building this system to add these countries and also helped them set up alerting in case a currency is requested for which there's no conversion setup. I expect this work will greatly improve the reliability of the new service. Although we do not own the new currency service, I helped make the change using Go and reviewed code from this team. After we made the change, I built 2 integration tests that exercise this functionality. By spending an additional day or two on it, we now have a safety net with unit tests and 2 integration tests, and we helped the new currency service be more reliable than before. I've been monitoring the shadow and the production systems, and there are no more differences in output. We had 100% identical responses in the past 4 days. Under-promise, over-deliver, over-communicate. One of the best ways to be perceived as someone who gets things done is to deliver as much as agreed, and sometimes more than agreed, and to do so consistently. This requires good judgment in figuring out how much you can definitely commit to and to avoid promising too much. This could mean committing to certain dates or deadlines for well-understood work or taking on difficult projects, bugs, and investigations, which you have the capability and capacity to get done. Don't forget to tell your peers and manager when you overdeliver. It can be a fine line, but this is not about boasting. It's about informing people when you go above and beyond expectations. For example, when finishing a project and building a neat utility that could be helpful later, you can say, "I got the PayPal integration done. I also created a utility that can be helpful later." And here's a better version. "I got the PayPal integration done last week, in line with the week-long estimate. However, as I was building it, I found myself spending too much time manually testing if it was working and thought, can we automate some of this? So I built a simple script that verifies if a payment method works using UI automation. I built this for PayPal at first, and doing so actually made development faster, as testing was easier. Now we have this utility. It's pretty easy to change it to test other types of payment methods, like bank cards. Here's a wiki page on how to use this tool and how to modify it." Communicate roadblocks early and offer trade-offs. The nature of software development is that unexpected problems occur all the time, like a library not working as expected, a strange bug that takes ages to fix, a new dependency appearing from nowhere and blocking you, and countless other things. Engineers perceived as unreliable often don't communicate new roadblocks. Instead, they try to solve them by themselves and frequently struggle, only making progress after another engineer steps in to help. In contrast, productive engineers are good at unblocking themselves, as discussed in Part 2, Chapter 7, Getting Things Done, and also recognize when a roadblock will delay a project. When unexpected work appears from nowhere, share this with your team, manager, and project lead. But don't only share the roadblock. Offer trade-offs on what else you could do instead of just delaying the work. For example, cut the scope of the project so you don't need to work on the roadblock now. Put a hack or shortcut in place that solves the roadblock in the short term, then do a proper fix later. Basically, you're advocating taking on tech debt in order to move faster now. Have somebody solve the roadblock. For example, can a platform team or a third-party vendor make a change that solves the problem? Get creative with trade-offs. By forcing yourself to consider alternatives, you might get closer to solving the roadblock in a smarter, faster way. 2. Your own work. Deal with inbound requests efficiently. Senior engineers get a higher number of inbound requests, such as, "Could you join this planning review next week? We need you for an interview tomorrow as a cover for an engineer who's sick. Can you please be my peer reviewer for performance reviews? We have a university recruitment event next month. Could you be a speaker? I need your help with a strange bug in a component you created 2 years ago. Would you have a few minutes to take a look with me?" These are all legitimate requests for which your experience is useful. On the other hand, they're also distractions that pull you away from more important work. Inbound requests and asks from others will always arrive. Over time, the volume of these can get overwhelming. There's no single best way to deal with them, but here are some approaches I've observed experienced engineers use with success. Block out time for uninterrupted, deep work. Allocate time when you don't help others in order to focus on your work. Mark this on your calendar and reject meetings and other interruptions. Treat it like a high-priority meeting. Of course, don't overdo blocking out. Say, "not right now," when in the zone. When you are in the zone and making good progress, push back on interruptions. Turn off chat notifications and tell people you'll get back to them later if they approach you directly. Time box how long you spend helping with something. When someone asks for assistance, limit how much time you spend on it to, say, 5 to 10 minutes. This forces you to be more efficient by giving the colleague pointers instead of diving in to solve the problem for them. Turn sync requests into async ones. For example, instead of attending a meeting where you would have little input, ask to be sent the meeting summary to read in your own time. This turns a synchronous request, the meeting, into an asynchronous one, meeting notes that you can review later. You can channel many requests for your time in a sync way to give feedback in an async way. Redirect requests to a colleague who'd benefit. Letting less experienced engineers take on some requests might boost their growth while lifting some of the load from your back. Know your number one priority work at all times. If you can only get one thing done today, what will it be? If you only ship one thing this week, what's the most important thing? This is your number one priority project. Know what it is and ensure you have enough time and space to get it done. Prioritize requests. Use the urgent, important matrix to assess how needed or otherwise your input really is. Treat tasks differently by urgency and importance. Urgent and important. Do at once or when you're no longer in the zone. Tasks could be helping with an outage where there's context or unblocking a teammate. Important, but not urgent. Record it and do it later, like giving feedback on a design document, a much-needed refactor, and so on. Tasks with deadlines may become urgent and important over time. Urgent but unimportant. This is work you don't necessarily need to do. Examples include a code review, which others have already signed off on, mitigating an outage in which enough people are already involved, or responding to new emails, which can usually wait. If it's not important, resist the urge to act at the expense of distracting yourself from your main work. Is it possible to pass these tasks to someone else, or just say no? Not urgent and not important. Just say no. Examples could include attending a meeting in which you have little input and don't care about, reading status update emails for projects you have no connection with, and so much more. Note: there is value in getting involved in work like this, but do so because there's a benefit, not just because you've been asked. Create a system for capturing important but not urgent work. One repeat challenge you'll face is recording important but not urgent work. Find a method that works for you. This could be in a simple document, in a to-do list, in your favorite editor or note-taking tool, in a physical notebook, in the Notes app of your phone. Experiment with which approach works best for you, and don't be afraid to switch things up. For anything unimportant, say no. There are ways you can do this politely, such as, "I'd love to help, but unfortunately, I have to complete number one priority work, and so cannot. I already have too many things on my plate, unfortunately, and I cannot take this on. If you have a list of projects you're working on, it's worth showing. I don't think I'm the right person to help. I'd suggest to ask the name of the right person. I don't think you need me to solve it. Here's a pointer on how you can figure it out yourself." Purge your to-do list every now and then. Many engineers feel a sense of defeat when clearing their to-do list of not urgent but important tasks. On the other hand, I'd recommend this as a way to reset things. The reality is that what's important to you changes over time. Any list you create of important work will eventually go stale. When this happens, you have two options. One, go through the existing list and remove work that's become unimportant. Two, start from scratch and make a shorter list of really important right now tasks. The second approach is faster and forces you to reprioritize work by only recording the most significant tasks. It also reduces stress about the other ones and reduces mental load going forward. Just don't forget to update relevant colleagues whose requests don't make your new, leaner list. Know that it's normal to feel overwhelmed. A common complaint senior and above engineers have is that no matter which approach they take, they still end up feeling overloaded and without enough time to do their important work. This is common. Here are a few things that can help should you encounter this. Collect everything you should be doing and talk the list through with your manager and mentor if you have one. If not, consider changing that. What are the things you really need to do? What can be given to a teammate? Which tasks can you just say no to with your manager's support? Chances are your manager won't be aware of everything you've been doing and will help you prioritize what's truly important for the team. Say no to new requests until your list shrinks. Alternatively, only take on new requests if you can strike something else from your list. See what happens when you decline for the reason that you're overloaded at present. Take a day or two off work. When you return, clear your list and start anew. If you do this too regularly, consider one of the alternatives. When it's done, it's properly done. There's something to say about software engineers who get things done properly. There's no shortage of engineers who can seemingly complete work quickly, but it later emerges the code they shipped has issues like bugs, uncovered edge cases, or UX that was cobbled together in haste. Engineers seen as productive are not necessarily the fastest at getting things done, but their work is fast enough, and crucially, the end result works as it should. Ask yourself if any of these apply to your work. After you ship a feature, bugs sometimes surface in this feature you released. You rarely write a testing plan for your feature, which goes through scenarios to validate before shipping. When your feature is finished, you don't always list unsupported edge cases with known bugs. Automated testing, monitoring, and alerting are not always done when you ship a feature. It's rare to find engineers to whom none of the above applies. This is because it's natural to move fast, ship to production, and fix things later if needed. Since many people operate this way, other engineers stick out more when they don't ship issues to production, and who are well aware of edge cases and resolve these before the code goes to production. So how can you be the engineer who gets things done properly, and whose work your peers and stakeholders can trust is properly done? A few approaches. Have a written specification. Many bugs in products are misunderstandings between what stakeholders expect and what software engineers build. Avoid such misunderstandings by insisting on a specification which describes how the feature should work, edge cases, and what's out of scope. Work with your product manager and business stakeholders before the implementation phase to clarify all this. Push back on starting work until you have a full understanding of how things should work from the product and customer points of view. Write this down to avoid misunderstandings. A product spec doesn't have to be lengthy, and the product manager doesn't need to write it. If there is no spec, discuss how the feature is expected to work with the product person or business stakeholder, and summarize this in a page or two with bullet points. Then, confirm with them that this is how things should work. This hour-long exercise could save days of work. There's also a fair chance the product person will point out errors, missing details, or edge cases if you show them a written spec. Have a testing plan. Before jumping into implementing a non-trivial feature, do some planning and sketch out your approach, such as which components you'll create and modify, how the architecture will be modified, trade-offs on approaches, and which one you choose. How will you test that your implemented feature works as expected? Which manual test cases will there be? What parts will you automate with unit integration or end-to-end tests? Which parts can only be tested in production, and how will that testing be done before the feature is declared ready? Many engineers skip test planning up front because it's more exciting and motivating to jump straight into implementation. However, the best time to think about how to test and what to test is at the planning stage, before getting carried away with implementation. When you have a test plan, share it with the product manager, business stakeholders, other engineers, or QA folks for feedback. You'd be surprised by which edge cases were missed or alternative testing approaches they suggest. Include testing, monitoring, and alerting as part of estimations. Testing and monitoring should be part of getting things done properly when working on larger code bases or building features for products where mistakes can have serious business impacts. However, many engineers forget to add automated tests and monitoring and/or alerting to a feature, or they don't bake this work into their estimation. The problem with treating this part of the work as separate is that product folks and business stakeholders will often want to skip it, as they see it as an opportunity to save time and move faster. There's a connection between getting things done properly and ensuring your work is tested and monitored in production. Skip testing and monitoring, and your work will be much less reliable. For that reason, don't negotiate over this part. Just do it. Don't throw it over the fence to QA. If you are lucky enough to have a dedicated quality assurance, QA, person and/or team in your workplace, don't just throw your work over the fence to them. An anti-pattern I've observed is that some engineering teams who work with QA folks tend to assume that testing and quality assurance is purely the responsibility of the QA team. So they tend to build things and then pass them on for testing, throwing it over the fence, without giving much thought to edge cases or how to test things, or without doing simple, manual tests. Unsurprisingly, this means things take longer. QA finds obvious issues, which any engineer could identify by doing bare-bones testing, and sends it back to engineers, who fix these issues, then hand it back to QA again. QA then finds more nuanced bugs, which might have escaped engineers' attention, and hands them back for fixing. Finally, after engineering resolves them, QA does another testing round, the third, and declares things work as expected. If this is you, then you're doing yourself a disservice. Involve QA folks during planning and work with them to create a test plan from the start. QA engineers tend to have a good sense for exotic edge cases and hard-to-catch bugs, so learn from them. Understand how they stress test systems, and utilize their expertise in making a more robust test plan. And don't just throw things over the fence. Work side by side with QA so you don't spend time sitting idly and doing nothing while waiting for QA to test things. Also, don't take QA for granted. Many engineering teams don't have dedicated QA folks. So, if you work with QA, collaborate with them, learn from them, and you'll grow your QA expertise. There's a fair chance that in your next team or role, there will be no dedicated QA. So having this skill set will help you ship higher quality work. Work in short iterations. How long does it usually take from coming up with an idea to having a prototype up and running to show others? How long does it usually take from picking up a bug to having a fix in production? If the answer to both is weeks and not hours or a day or two, then you're likely not seen as a very productive engineer. In the best case, you're likely perceived as slow and steady. In the worst case, delete and steady. Ship something every day. Productive software engineers can, and do, ship code almost every day. I've observed this at small companies where it's easy enough to do, and at larger ones, all the way up to places with thousands of software engineers. At Google, where 20,000 software engineers work, an average of 2 code changes are shipped to production per engineer per day. This includes automated ones, but they're not the majority. The only way to ship so frequently is to work in short iterations, which means break down your work into smaller, standalone chunks. These might be small iterations that are shippable as they are, or logical steps that split larger pieces of work into smaller ones, such as scaffolding, first piece of business logic, other edge cases, cleanup. Produce small enough code changes and/or pull requests. These are easier to create, easier to review, faster to review, and therefore faster to ship. Incentivize your teammates to do the same. Smaller changes mean not getting stuck for hours on a single code review. Long stretches of work. There are reasons to do longer iterations. Iterating fast is a great approach for making rapid, stable progress, but speedy iteration is not the answer to every type of problem. Here are some examples. Research. When researching a new technology, framework, or library to use, the aim is to share learnings and recommend whether or not to adopt it. This research can be time-consuming, but shorter iterations often make little sense. Improving tooling or infrastructure. Improving the tools your team uses often takes research, and then prototyping or building a new approach. For example, deciding to containerize development is a large undertaking involving a longer research phase, a prototyping, proof-of-concept phase, and a rollout phase. It's usually sensible to do research and prototyping as longer stretches of work and to iterate on the rollout. A major refactor. Some refactorings simply can't be done in chunks. An experienced engineer might make drastic but necessary changes to a complex refactoring task. Most large refactors can be split into smaller pieces to show more visible progress, if you intend this. A rewrite. similar to a refactor, except that rewrites usually have specific goals like addressing a performance problem. While rewrites can be done in chunks, it's almost always faster if an engineer does the whole change in one go. Just be aware of the risks of rewrites. They are very expensive and might not bring the benefits you want. A long stretch of work under the hood tends to be a set of shorter iterations for which an engineer decides not to create individual pull requests. Perhaps it's because during these iterations, parts of the product are deliberately broken, or because the engineer thinks short iterations would break their flow. Whatever the reason, there's always a method to this type of work. Long stretches of work mean less feedback. If you don't raise individual pull requests for code reviews as you go, the final one will be so complex that most peers will struggle to give comprehensive feedback and even miss major issues. If you don't share the outline of each step, people won't be able to give feedback, point out what's been missed, or identify that you're on the wrong track. If this feedback arrives at the end, a lot of work may need to be redone. Doing long stretches of work makes sense when you don't need feedback. Such situations include building a new company, a new product, or a prototype that proves a point. However, most situations involving teamwork and consulting others like product folks, business stakeholders, or customers do involve feedback. 3. Your team. Break down and estimate projects. As a senior engineer, your focus will often be at the project level. Ensure you understand what work needs to be done for the entire project and that it is broken down to the necessary level. This work overlaps with a tech lead's responsibilities, so we go in depth on ways to do this in Part 4, The Pragmatic Tech Lead. Document for others. When explaining something to a teammate, consider writing down the key message so that when the next person asks, you can point to a note or diagram. If your team already has a wiki or internal knowledge base, then add documents to it. If one doesn't exist yet, create it and lead by example in adding to it. We cover more on documentation in Part 3, Chapter 13, Software Engineering. Unblock your team. By now, you should be good at unblocking yourself by noticing when you're blocked and getting support to be unblocked. As a senior engineer, you should try to spot when your colleagues are blocked and help unblock them. Pair with others. When you see a colleague stuck on a task or a problem, offer to pair with them. If your team holds regular status update meetings like daily stand-ups, this can be easy enough to identify. If an engineer has been hung up on the same problem space for several days, then they are probably stuck. When helping to unblock someone, resist the temptation to walk them straight to the fix, assuming you know it. For example, if it's a bug and you can see the exact line of code responsible, don't just point it out. Instead, help them learn how to unblock themselves. Try coaching them by asking questions that guide them to the offending line of code, perhaps after showing them a new debugging method. Lead by example in resolving external blockers. Some blockers are external to your team, like waiting on another engineering team to review a planning document, or waiting on a platform team to make a change to their API. If members of your team have external blockers they cannot resolve themselves, consider injecting yourself into the situation and resolving it, and explaining the process for this. Doing this will involve communicating with stakeholders and teams external to your own. If you have a network within the company, basically that you know people on the blocking team, then resolving the issue will be easier. And if not, then reaching out could be the way to sort the blocker and meet new people, which could be the start of a good relationship. Become better at thinking outside the box. Productive engineers can think outside the box and offer unconventional yet effective solutions to problems. For example, at Uber, the mobile platform team noticed that the number of memory leaks in the Android app kept slowly increasing and degrading the app experience. Their theory was that these leaks were degrading business metrics, but had no proof of this. Fixing these leaks one by one would have been challenging, because most leaks were in feature code, and platform engineers would have struggled to understand the business logic. Even if they did and managed to fix leaks, new leaks would have surely crept back into the code base. an engineer on the platform team suggested a less conventional way to tackle this problem. Why not turn the fixing of memory leaks into a competition and make it a way to educate engineers on how to spot, fix, and avoid memory leaks? This engineer rallied a few others, and key members across several platform teams decided to do something. This group identified a list of the top memory leaks and hosted an external speaker for a tech talk to inspire and educate engineers on solving Android leaks. Also, the mobile platform team hosted office hours to help teams debug. To measure the impact on the product, all memory leak fixes were put behind a feature flag and rolled out in experiments to measure their impact on business metrics. It turned out the aggregate of these fixes did make a difference to the business. How do you get better at thinking outside the box? Here are some approaches. Broaden your experience. Get hands-on with domains outside of your own. Much outside-the-box thinking simply applies a common approach from one domain to another. For example, if you are familiar with common or uncommon practices for building front-end applications, perhaps some could work for back-end development. Go deep. Become an expert in a few areas and dig deep into understanding them entirely. It could be a language, framework, or a code base. Once you have a full understanding of how things work, thinking outside the box will simply be offering the solutions that experts tend to do. Come up with more than one potential solution to a problem. When facing a problem, you'll likely come up with one way of tackling it. For example, when an important bug on the back end needs fixing, the obvious solution is to simply make a code change which does this. However, when an obvious solution is at hand, challenge yourself to find alternatives. For example, could the bug be fixed by making configuration changes without shipping code? If shipping a code change to the backend, can the fix be verified in a canary release first? Could the fix be shipped as an A/B test to observe if it improves the metrics it should positively impact? Meet and observe engineers who solve problems creatively. Ask how they do it, where their ideas come from, and how they know an idea might work. 4. The big picture. Become product-minded. The most productive engineers aren't always the fastest coders or those who best understand computer systems. What they frequently are is engineers who are good enough at engineering, but excellent at understanding the product, customers, and the business. This helps them find smart trade-offs and build less complex engineering solutions faster, as well as offer solutions that solve the customer's real problem. We go into more detail on this topic in Part 1, Chapter 5, Thriving in Different Environments. To recap, become a product-minded engineer by considering these approaches. Understand how and why your company is successful. Build a strong relationship with your product manager. Engage in user research, customer support, and related activities. Bring well-backed product suggestions to the table. Offer product engineering trade-offs for projects you work on. Seek frequent feedback from the product manager. Understand the business. As software engineers, we are not paid to write code. What we're really paid to do is to solve problems for the business, frequently by writing code. Understand what the business cares about and how the software you build helps the company achieve its business goals. I offer approaches for this in Part 5, Chapter 21, Understanding the Business.